Scoppy, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time. You've been a very vocal Uranium Bull over the years, and
I'm just a vocal person.
Yeah, absolutely, and we appreciate that about you, of course. I think it was probably late Q2 or early Q3. No, it was Q2 of last year, definitely Q2, where you made a proclamation that you were taking uranium to ludicrous levels. This happened to come out just weeks, if not maybe a month, before the price really started to take off. And we've seen the uranium price double over the past 3 months, which has been an enormous move for the sector. That was a very prescient call. Maybe we can just kind of kick things off here with a sort of a higher level view of where you see this sector going. Where are we in the cycle? Where, of course, this is not a contrarian bet any longer. This is not making a bet on a hated sector and hoping it goes from absolutely terrible to just bad. Clearly, we're seeing an increased adoption of nuclear on a global basis. We've seen the commodity go from $18 a pound to now $106 a pound, where we are right now. It's made an enormous move during this cycle. Where are we now, and what has you so bullish on the sector still?
Well, I mean, I think we're early in the cycle. Maybe it's not hated, but it's just ignored. I talk with a lot of institutional investors on a pretty regular basis, and they have no exposure. They feel like they missed the move or something because, the price is up 5X. And I don't think they've missed anything. If you're going to run deficits like we're running, eventually the price has to go higher to incentivize mines to come back online. And, we keep hearing every couple of months about a new mine that's, I guess, restarting. But these are smallish things. They take a couple of years to restart. And you kind of look at the wedge of demand out till the end of this decade alone. And you look at what the supply is, if every mine that they say is going to come online actually comes online, and these things never come online on time or on budget, and they mostly just don't come online. You look at all the pounds coming, and you're in the couple hundred million of uncovered supply. And you could do a greenfield startup today, and I'm not sure you can fully get it online unless it was ISR by the end of the decade. And the really big ones like Arrow, I mean that's probably pushed into the 2030s. And so I don't know where the pounds come from, and the price has to go up to, incentivize people to find pounds. I mean, there's pounds out there, but they have to come to the market somehow. And so I'm just focused on that wedge. And I mean, what's most amazing to me is that some of the largest producers like Kazatomprom or Cameco, which are roughly half of global supply, seem to have serious problems with existing mature assets. And then, there's the whole enrichment cluster where, I think tails are going to go up and it's going to be a major draw on the supply side and, flipping, what was secondary supply into secondary demand for the rest of this decade. And I don't think that's even on anyone's radar. I mean, look, in the end, you and I, we inhabit this little weird world of Twitter finance. There's a couple smart people there and a lot of guys who just yell nonsense. Most investors live in the Wall Street world, and you read Wall Street research reports and they're nonsensical. I mean, Bank of America says the market's balanced next year. Like, these people are going to lead to tens of billions of losses for utilities if they read that stuff. I mean, those guys should be upping their inventories now and not waiting for the supply that never seems to come. I mean, a lot of the crisis we're having now is because UxC gave bad data to everyone and everyone ran down their inventory when they should have been building inventory. And I see this always with the professionals screwing it all up. But anyway, I think we're early in this cycle. I think that the price is going higher.
Cuppy, thanks again for coming on. I think the catalyst since the last time we published one of these episodes really was, and Justin called it, was the inability of Kazatomprom to increase that production. Obviously, the market caught on, and a lot of people were speculating that they were not going to be able to do that. Well, sure enough, that comes to light. And that's really what moved the spot price into triple digits here. I like to look at the sentiment, obviously. Oftentimes more than the fundamentals, and I completely understand the supply and demand fundamentals right now of physical uranium. But the sentiment, like, I can't help but think in the back of my mind, we have been here before, and when things start going exponentially higher very quickly, things usually cool off or they come crashing down. I'm not saying they're going to come crashing down. I don't think the fundamentals will support that. But give us a sense of how you're reading the sentiment right now behind the uranium crowd.
Well, I mean, the sentiment is a couple hundred assholes on Twitter that are really, really bullish. And, you know, we've mostly been bullish for 2 years. I think the sentiment is the sentiment. But you have to understand that there's really three markets here, okay? First market is the utilities and the producers and what's happening in the spot market and the term market. That's a world unto itself, okay? That's a small closed universe that every once in a while the finance world interacts with because a hedge fund buys physical or, you know, SPUT buys some physical. But it's mostly a closed market. You know, financial players were largely, you know, out of the market last year, at least, you know, Yellowcake and SPUT. And so you have this closed market. That's the real market. Okay, that's the real thing. We talk with traders. We talk with, you know, utilities. We talk with lots of these people. It's business as usual. You know, you need a pound, you call your broker. Your broker can't find a pound, well, then you lift the book $20. You know, I think that's just, you know, the market's gotten really thin and utilities are hesitant to go into the spot market because they're going to move the smart market. But that's the real market. That's what we're looking at. And I'd say, whereas this euphoria over on the Twitter market, this panic and fear over on the actual market, because there's just no offers. There's nothing on the books. You know, if you want anything, it doesn't exist. I mean, SPUT's been sitting here with a cashed up position for a week and there's nothing on the offer. They can't buy. And so that's one market, okay? Then you have this weird second market, which is basically SPUT and Yellowcake. And that's like, you know, this transition between the other market, which is all the guys on Twitter and everyone else who's playing around in junior mining stocks. And that's just blatant gambling. You know, I know you guys are, you know, long some of these things and supportive, and I don't, you know, mean to be, you know, dismissive. I'm sure there's some of these $1 stocks that go to 100 in this cycle, but I think most of them are just highly speculative, and they're very risky, and they're very volatile, and it's amazing how they trade on sentiment. They'll move up 20 or 30% in a week and then come crashing down and move up 20, 30%, and the cycle repeats. And you know, every time they move up 20, 30%, they do another equity raise, and that's usually what starts the crash back down. And we've seen it's a bunch of capital raise in the last week or two in the sector. I'm not trying to, you know, blame anyone. You need cash to move forward. But that's the part that I think is overheated and hot and really speculative. Yeah, there's a bunch of uranium assholes who are really, really bullish. And look, that could come crashing down tomorrow or it could triple. I don't know. The actual market, the thing I'm focused on is the, you know, what's happening in the physical market, whether it's term or spot. And I don't feel like there's any euphoria there because there's no active players there. There's a couple of hedge funds that probably got long, you know, $50 ago. And that's it. You know, I'd say it's more fear and despondency. And, you know, that's the market I'm focused on. So that's how I see it. Whether it's going to come crashing down in the spot market, I don't think so. There's too many damn bids. I mean, they're stacked up bids every couple dollars down now. Could it tread water for a while? Yeah, sure. Could it double again next week? Sure. You know, that's kind of how I see it. It's not something I'm really focused on as to which direction the next $5 is. I think, you know, general direction drives it.
It was interesting. You know, Twitter's always a good gauge for some of those things, specifically sentiment. And I mean, I shared with Justin, you know, over the last week, and I posted that after uranium spot went over, you know, three digits, I posted it needs a cooling down. And what was it? 60,000 views later, you know, and all the hate mail. It was pretty impressive. I mean, I just kind of wanted to get a gauge, but it is almost kind of like that. You know, you could exchange the laser eyes from the Bitcoin crowd and put on like the radioactive eyes on everybody's Twitter account, yeah. And you could see what's going on. That's really fascinating.
Guys got really excited. It finally started moving. We've been waiting years for this. You know, I'm an inflection investor, and I do a lot of investing in sectors that are multi-baggers. I've had lots of these 10, 20 baggers in my career. And at some point, the sentiment has to get bullish because you need someone to buy it. I think we've all been trading in this range where sentiment gets a little heated and you sell and then you buy back in the dip. And there's going to be guys that are going to miss the whole thing because things get a little hot and they don't get a chance to get back in. You know, that's not investment advice. That's just fact. Look, at some point, guys have to get really bullish. And I rode Bitcoin from 90 to 100 to 58,000. Along the way, everyone got bullish. They stayed bullish. They kept getting more bullish. And, you know, I think one thing to point out is like these things go in cycles, phase, almost like a phase. Okay. So, you know, think of chemistry, you know, when something's a solid, it's not volatile. It just sits there. That's what we were for a while. And then we went to the liquid phase. That's kind of the move from, let's call it 30 to 60. And, you know, liquids are more volatile. And then you get to the gaseous phase. That's where we are now. And it's just going to be more volatile. And it's going to be more random. And it's going to be less predictable. And there's going to be days where physical moves $25 or $50 in a day. There's going to be days when it goes down $20 or $50 in a day. You know, but if it's going to go to a couple hundred or, you know, maybe even four figures. And that's not, you know, me pointing at the, you know, the bleachers and saying we're definitely going there. But these things have a way of really, really, really overshooting. I mean, think back to GameStop. No one ever thought it would go where it would go. And it only stopped when the government intervened. I think this one also is going to keep going until the government intervenes because the shortages are so severe. And at some point, the panic sets in and guys overorder and they overcontract and they worry, you know, looking forward multiple years. And everyone's going to want more inventory. If the world's utilities say, I want to have 1 year extra inventory and I want to build it up over 2 years, well, that's 100 million pounds a year of incremental demand. Like, where does that come from? I mean, they've been drawing down inventory for years and years. These guys are not price sensitive. I mean, they're public utilities. It's the government's money. As a CEO of a public utility, you wear a nice suit, you golf with the governor, and they pay you a few million dollars a year to do that. It's a great 9-to-5 job. Like the only thing you're not allowed to do is run out of uranium. And, you know, it's ratepayer money anyway. You just get a rate increase or it's a pass-through. Like they're just going to pay the price and they're going to restock. And I think it's going to do something really, really stupid. And, you know, God's going to get optimistic along the way. You know, that's kind of how I see it. And like I said, I've traded lots of these things. You know, Bitcoin used to move in a couple $100 a day. And then it started moving in 1,000 clips. And then you start having these, you know, multiple 1,000 clips on the way to the top. And I think this is going to be the same.
You make so many interesting points that I want to follow up on, Cuppy. I mean, your last point that utility fuel buyers, there's one thing that they have to do, and that's not run out of fuel. And you're absolutely right. And uranium itself, so U308, not the entire fuel cycle, but U308 itself is, what, 4-5% of the overall operating budget of a nuclear power plant. It's a rounding error for these guys. And I've heard verbatim from a nuclear fuel buyer, if uranium is $1,000 a pound and I have to buy it, I buy it. And I don't know that we're going to that price, but price projections at this point, considering the market dynamics, I think you can throw all of them out the window. I don't think any price is going to make sense. And I think the downward pressure on the price is just absolutely non-existent here. Something that you mentioned earlier on, and I think that you were specifically talking about the investor interest when you said, okay, the hedge funds just feel like they either missed the boat, they're not interested at all still. But really what I'm thinking about is something that you mentioned at WNA last year, that you went to WNA and you were looking around the room at a couple of other investors that quote unquote get it. And you guys were all looking around the room, like kind of like the Big Short Las Vegas convention where these people have no clue what's about to happen. And here we are 3 or 4 months later, there was an NEI conference earlier this week in Washington, D.C. We both probably have mutual contacts that were there. Utilities are putting on a brave face. They're not panicked. They're not concerned. And we're at $106 a pound. The price has just doubled in the past 3 or 4 months, and they're still not showing concern. And in my opinion, what we're going to see is we're going to see some large utilities come in size probably this year. And the price is just going to keep moving. And on top of all of this, we've got the primary producers of the world missing production. Kazatomprom just highlighted to the market last week or a week and a half ago, they're about to have their Q4 conference call and reporting in the next week and a half. Cameco is right on their heels. The major producers of the world that should be making and are making cash hand over fist are missing production. What does this mean for the supply side for the next 3, 4, 5 years?
Well, the deficit's going to be bigger than I budgeted. You know, it's even worse. I think what's going to start happening that's going to really spook utilities. So, I mean, you talk to traders, I talk to traders. You probably have a similar view. It seems that most of the move higher from, let's call it 50 to 100, is shorts covering. It's failed to delivers that are being affected in the spot market. You had Cameco and Kazatomprom in the market as physical buyers, but you haven't seen much in the way of utilities. I mean, utilities, from my understanding, they've submitted RFPs and waited for the RFPs to come back, and they haven't come back. Just no one's responded. And so they just resubmit the RFP. It's not really utilities buying. I'm sure there are utilities, but my understanding is it's not really been our utilities. Utilities just sit there below the market hoping for a pullback. I think, you know, this is this famous phrase that if you're going to panic, you want to panic first. And I think a utility is going to panic. I think they're going to reach out to a trader and say, if I want 5 million pounds, what price? And the trader is going to say it's a 2-handle or a 3-handle, and they're going to go done. And, you know, some trader is going to be short 5 million pounds at 250 or 300, and they're just going to chase it higher. I mean, that's part of what happened with Diablo Canyon. The guy got short. You know, I just think that's what's eventually gonna really start driving the market in, you know, 25 and 50 daily clips as traders sweep the book. But so far, the utilities don't seem very concerned. But I mean, they should be, because they have offtakes with large producers that are likely to force majeure them. And once the force majeures start, like, everyone panics. Right now, you know, the producers are going into the spot market to cover their shortfall. But that's very expensive because, you know, they've, I mean, I have no idea what the hell Cameco is doing, but they pre-sold a lot of their stuff at 60 and 70, and now they're going in the market at 100. And, you know, you can't do that forever. At some point, they're going to, you know, utilize the provisions of force majeure in their contracts and force majeure. And suddenly utilities that thought they had all their, you know, demand covered are going to realize they're totally uncovered. You know, they thought they were covered in the 60s, and now they're uncovered in the couple hundreds. And it's just going to be a stampede. And, you know, it's hard to really know exactly what's happening at these large producers. We just know that there's misses everywhere. We also know Rust Adam is short and they're chasing. We know Namibia is going to miss targets because of water issues. Like, no one's hitting targets. And I just think it's something's going to break. Someone's going to panic. Someone's going to force majeure. But look, we went into this year, 2024, we thought it'd be a 20, 30 million deficit. And then we did the numbers on enrichment, figured the deficit would be larger. And then, you know, we know that Kazatomprom is going to miss, and Cameco is having serious issues at Cigar Lake. They're going to miss. And MacArthur River isn't really ramping as it's supposed to. And, you know, you have all these bits and pieces, and maybe the number, you know, was 50 in my mind in September, and now it's maybe like 60 or 70. I don't really know. Could the deficit be like 100 next year? Like, it's terrifying to think. And I assume the utilities eventually do these numbers, and, you know, they put 0.3 in their tails assay, and they go, wow. I mean, but so far they've mostly just relied on UxC, who's led them all off a cliff.
Mm-hmm. Copy. Who's going to vend those pounds? I mean, if it does come to a breaking point, you know, I keep on thinking the story is like exactly like set up for like a Mark Rich type person to muddy the waters and find the pounds no matter at what cost and get them to wherever they need to go to benefit, you know, that Mark Rich like person. But where are those pounds going to come from? Can you crack open a Russian market, you know, some sort of backdoor way? Do you expect something like that to happen and then it gets real political real quick?
I mean, there's pounds. I don't want you to think there's no pounds. I mean, China has pounds. They obviously don't want to part with those pounds, but China has some, Russia has some, there's government stockpiles. I mean, there's pounds in places, and someone will figure out how to unlock those pounds and put them on the market. But you need much higher prices for some swashbuckling sort of commodity physicals trader to do the thing they need to do. You know, it's not happening at 106. You know, I don't get you the wrong idea. There's plenty of pounds, but it's going to take higher prices. But then I don't know how the rest of the fuel cycle is going to work either, because there's huge bottlenecks all around there too. Also logistics and everything else that goes through the fuel cycle. Mm-hmm. It's going to be messy. I like messy. I think at GameStop, that's, you know, that's been my view for 2.5 years now. And I've been doing this 25 years in inflecting securities. And like I said, I've had lots of 10 and 20 baggers. And I've had lots that didn't work. And there's just something about certain trades where as the trade matures, it keeps getting better and better and better. And this is one that keeps getting better. Oftentimes, unfortunately, it gets worse. And, you know, you stop out and tied up a bunch of money. It was kind of frustrating and annoying. There's a lot in the middle. This one just keeps maturing better. And every data point seems to be that there's more problems than ever I had budgeted. And I like that. It's good. Mm-hmm. It's good for me. I think one other thing about this trade is I originally thought this trade was just about Sprott sequestering pounds. I really thought we'd be a somewhat balanced market by 2027. It doesn't look like we're going to be anywhere near balanced by then, you know. And I thought this would just be about, you know, Sprott sequestering pounds that would tip the balance. And it looks like we have huge deficits in 2027. And then you have Sprott kind of, they're supposed to be, they're capped at 9 million pounds. Like it's a whatever. You know, this is more about other problems now. So the thesis is become a much better thesis. It's like true organic supply and demand, as opposed to some financial guys trying to corner the market.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I honestly think, and I'm assuming you probably agree with this, I think Sprott's done the heavy lifting already. That 9 million pound annual cap of their purchasing, I suppose, was sort of a compromise in order for them to have that 1.5 billion ATM. If Sprott buys 9 million pounds, first of all, I don't think they can physically at any price buy 9 million pounds in a single year at this point, which I never thought I would say that, but it's absolutely true. You know, utilities panicking was never part of my thesis, and I don't know how it's avoidable at this point. The deficits are huge. And you mentioned a couple of times tails assay, and this is something I think it's important to understand. I don't want to get like too deep in the weeds here, but anybody can go to Urenco's website and pull up a SWU calculator. And what that is you can essentially plug in all of the elements of that calculation that dictate the feed requirements based on tails assay. So you can go and just everybody who's listening to this should do this. Google search Urenco, U-R-E-N-C-O, SWU, S-W-U, calculator, and go in and plug in 0.2 tails and then plug in 0.3 tails. And you'll notice that's a 20% increase in feed demand. That's exactly what we're talking about here. The transactional and operational tails are rising at the same time right now. Utilities are booking enrichment. I've heard, Cuppy, we've seen enrichment booked out into the 2040s at this point. So wow. Actual contracts for uranium are going into the mid and late 2030s for enrichment even farther out. And that's the only place where there's availability is going out 7 to 10 years and beyond. And there's such little supply for so many different reasons. Every single utility has flexed up their deliveries from contracts they signed 3, 4, 5 years ago. That's happening. It's squeezing Cameco. It's squeezing Orano. It's squeezing Kazatomprom. There's just no flex left in the system. The only flex I can see, like you also mentioned, is China's inventory. And so far, they have not been sellers into the market at $106 a pound. There's nobody selling here. Everybody who has inventory is holding on more tightly. Why sell at 106 if I can sit on my hands for 4 days and sell at 115? Like, that's the sentiment that's in the market right now.
I don't think that's China's goal here. Like, China wants to have 5 years inventory. And you look at their build out plan and what's, you know, getting currently built and what's in the pipeline for future build. And they're below the 5 year buffer they want to have. I don't think, look, China's got trillions in reserves. China's got tons of capital. What are they going to do? They're going to peel off 10 million pounds and sell it. Like, it's not really the thing they're trying to do. They're not trying to game the market. They're not trying to, you know, put a trade on. They're not financial operators here. China wants to change their grid from coal to nuclear over time. So they're no longer reliant on imports. They're no longer, you know, dirty industry. Pollution's a big issue in China. And I think they want to really grow their stockpile because they're below that five-year buffer that they need to have. So at the margin, they could be sellers, but I think at the margin, they're more likely buyers. And you've seen them multiple times go into contracts, go into mining projects where they take actual ownership of the mine in order to get, you know, the offtake. You've seen them do that in Namibia. You've seen them do that all sorts of places. I think they're going to continue to do that because they really want the you know, security of supply that, you know, I think Western utilities are going to wish they had. I know this is kind of a one-sided podcast because we're all really, really bullish. But I think the point I want to make to people who are watching this is that it's going to get weird and wild. And there's going to be days where, you know, physical doesn't trade like this week. Because I just don't think there's anything on the offer. There's going to be weeks where the market goes up dramatically. There's going to be weeks where the market goes down dramatically. And this is all going to be done on a couple hundred thousand pounds of transaction volume. And it's all kind of, you know, ephemeral. You know, I would tell you the market really is 100 bid at 250 right now if you want to move £1 million. And like that's kind of where the world is. And everything else is just a trade on the pink sheets. And I would just kind of ignore it and focus on the longer term fundamentals. Otherwise, you are going to get shaken out. And when you see everyone on Twitter having a circus and celebrating, I don't think that sentiment is the sentiment, because we're watching this little tiny subsegment, which is $1 and $2 junior stocks. And the real market is the physicals market.
Are you waiting for the Barron's cover? If Barron's comes out, is that...
I don't care. Look, eventually... Well, there's two things to keep in mind here, okay? Uranium is going to do what uranium is going to do because of physical supply and demand imbalance. Full stop. If Sprott Physical Uranium and Yellowcake, I'm long both of them, if they're going to go up, you are eventually going to need more buyers, because there's no mechanism for those two to actually track physical. And I think you watch the discount and premium to NAV as indicative of where sentiment is. And they're both at not huge, but decently large discounts to NAV right now, which I think is indicative that sentiment isn't really that bullish. It's sort of in the middle. You know, if you look at the range, they usually trade between NAV and a point, 15% discount to NAV, and they're kind of right in the middle of that range right now. So I'd say sentiment's right in the middle. It's kind of a balanced sentiment, if you want to think of it as like a weather vane. But if you want these, if physical is going much higher and these need to go higher, well, then eventually Barron's needs to write an article about it. And you need some of my friends who say, Cuppy, I missed it, it's already tripled, to say, yeah, maybe it's another 10X here. And, you need someone to show up. And I just think this is part of the cycle. It's part of the process. And the cycle can go much further than you ever think is possible. I mean, I keep going back to Bitcoin just because it's an asset everyone knows. I mean, I'd much rather talk about, some small cap thing that I did at 20X on. But, Bitcoin, it was a 6X for me. The cycle started where everyone said Bitcoin's dead and it's never going to be useful for anything. And that was in 2020. And a year later, porn stars had their own coins, and my entire Twitter feed was porn stars shilling Titcoin and Asscoin. Like, the cycle went further than anyone thought was possible. And, that's when I knew it was time to leave. I mean, this cycle can go further than anyone thinks possible. I can't even imagine what people are going to be pumping. Now, I was in the last uranium cycle. There were 9 stocks. I bought all 9 stocks. You didn't have to do any research. I just built an ETF. I ended up owning, in some cases, 9 of some of these things. They weren't very big. They were like 10 and 20 million market caps. And I wish I had held longer. I sold after 3 and 4X. I was younger and stupider. I wouldn't be doing this podcast now if I had held another year. I'd be focused on which jet to take. No, these things were all 20X. They all went from 10, 20 million market cap to a couple billion. And along the way, they built like 1,500 more of these things. We're at the stage of the cycle now where guys are asking around in Vancouver, hey, does anyone have a uranium deposit? I'm going to take my AI shell and do uranium this year. And, we're just starting this cycle. And so just roll with it. Just don't get shaken out. I mean, look, make sure you sell too soon, because the way back down is going to be really, really steep. So definitely make sure you sell too soon. And the last 6 months, unfortunately, are usually the most fun part. So you got to, it's knife's edge as to when to sell. But make sure you sell too soon, but also make sure you don't get shaken out halfway through.
I got a follow-up question, and maybe this is for both Cuppy and you, Justin, but what are the effects on the utilities here and obviously the consumers? If utilities have to pay higher price for their fuel, that's got to get covered somehow. What does that mean for the consumer? But at the same time, I guess the flip question is, what does that mean for the utilities industries and their publicly traded companies that are utilizing nuclear energy here? I mean, is there a side play on this?
I'll let you go first, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is it depends on the market, but largely it's passed on to consumers. And because uranium itself is such a small percentage of the overall operating budget, it's I don't want to say it's negligible, but it's not something that's going to keep a nuclear power plant from operating. So if they have to pay, let's say $200 a pound versus $100 a pound, that's a 5% increase in the overall budget. And they can pass it on in most markets to their ratepayers. So it's not really that big. I mean, we see far larger fluctuations in the natural gas market, and those are passed on to ratepayers all the time. And so, and it happens to be cheap right now, and perhaps that's somewhat of a headwind, but because this is such a tight physical market with this particularly unique fuel that cannot be replaced, natural gas and oil can do whatever they're going to do, and it's not going to affect this market. So rates are fluctuating all the time, especially in places like in certain Western countries that have gone, you know, kind of balls to the wall in wind and solar. Their rates are all over the place. They have negative rates, and then they have rates that are 5x what they were paying 2 years ago. So it's not really a case against higher prices for uranium to say that the power rates are going to fluctuate because of this. And it's such a small percentage of their budget. It doesn't really move the needle that much, in my opinion.
I guess I'd also add that, you know, the vast majority of the uranium that's going to be consumed with the rest of this decade is already contracted. And there's floors and ceilings and this, you know, let's call it 60, 70, maybe 80. Like, it's all been contracted already. What's moving the market is, you know, the remaining 10, 15, 20% that people need when they're doing enrichment, say, the tail assay goes up and you need more pounds to basically do your enrichment. So, you know, you have most of the pounds already contracted. You go out for a couple hundred thousand more pounds because you need it for, you know, an enrichment run, you know, or there's always going to be one or two utilities that were incompetent and totally didn't do any contracting. They were totally spot, but that's just one or two guys. I think most of it is not going to matter. So what if you pay 200 for 10% and 60 on the other 90%? Like, the blend up isn't that high, really. But that's kind of how I think about it. Of course, there's going to be one or two utilities that cry. And every time something happens, there's always a utility that goes bankrupt. You know, we've seen this over and over when, you know, when you had the last freeze in Texas, a bunch of utilities got in trouble. There's always something that happens, but it's on the margin. It's not most people.
That's a really good point, Cubby, because most utilities are covered for the short term, right? Like, next year, 98% of utilities are covered, right? Something like that. It's a huge amount of covered, and the spot price is not really necessarily what's dictating what utilities are paying and what will be passed on to ratepayers. So they are kind of different markets. With all of that said, what we've really seen move the market a lot over the past, let's say, 18 months has been unexpected life extensions or restarts. Like you mentioned, Diablo Canyon, early part of last year, PG&E came into the market with a 6 point something million pound RFP that took 3 months to fill, and it moved the market $5. And at the time, that was big. That same RFP coming into the market right now would probably move the market $25. A few months after that, the Koreans, who have shifted sentiment on nuclear over the past few years with a new president, they've gone from phasing out nuclear to not phasing out nuclear. And one of their construction projects was restarted that had previously been halted. And then they had a couple reactors get life extensions. The Koreans came into the market with an RFP and they had a firm price. They said, this is what we want, and this is the price that we want. And the market said, go screw. So, and those two things moved the market. So these are relatively small life extensions. Now we have EDF going to extend a couple of reactors in Belgium. We're talking about restarting the Palisades reactor in Michigan. EDF is talking about the 8 reactors they operate in the UK, getting even 2 or 3 year life extensions. That's going to be a 5+ million pound RFP that's going to hit the market in the next 12 months. And these marginal RFPs that are unexpected are moving the market enormously. So we have the term contracting market, utilities mostly covered for the next year or two, but they're starting to now buy into the mid-2030s. And now that spot market is where short-term needs are met or increasingly not met. And the price is just, there's no reason the price is $106 a pound right now. It doesn't matter for whoever is selling at that price that it needs to be that price. It's just where we're at for a necessary commodity in a thin market. Like, it's not incentivizing anybody to do anything at $106 a pound.
Well, I'd also add that, you know, all the force majeures are really going to change the dynamic in the market. You know, you have Niger that's offline, sort of offline. You know, it's basically forced Orano to go scramble around the world looking for pounds. You know, what's happening with Kazatomprom, where it's a soft force majeure. I mean, maybe they're not forcing their utilities to go buy pounds, but they're going out there and buying pounds. And eventually, I think they're going to send notices to utilities and force the utilities to go buy pounds. So these guys are contracted, but that's really what's driving it. It's a couple of players. and in a market with zero offers. It's just nothing. The offers are going to eventually first probably come from hedge funds that bought it at 50 and take some off the table. And then from there, I don't really know. You're going to need to mobilize a government stockpile somewhere. You're going to need someone like a Mark Rich that knows which minister to call and can get the stockpile either mobilized or lent.
Copy. It's an exciting time. It's kind of wild.
I waited 2 years for this. I want to say one other thing. There was a period of time, like we had this first surge when Sprott first got listed, everyone got super excited. And then for 2 years, it just sat there. Sprott was between $14 and $16. Physical was between $45 and $50. I have a ton of friends that left the trade. They said, this isn't working. You know, the discount to NAV slowly widened. They got all despondent. Sprott wasn't buying any more physical. And I said, just wait. And my friends all exited the trade. I see a lot of them like looking around and bummed. They have half positions. They have no positions. That's just how markets are. They're designed to push you out. And to everyone who's in this trade, make sure you know what you own and why you own it. And you have the mental staying power that you could, stay in the trade if the trade goes sideways for a bit. But it really does feel good that we finally have some momentum. And it seems like it's happening. And the fact that you have momentum building is what's driving other utilities to go ask questions. You know, the CEO's asking this procurement guy, are you sure you have the pounds? You know, let's just top it off a little. Where no one would ever do that at 50, but now that it's in motion, it gets this reflexivity to it. And this is the fun part. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Trevor.
No, you're all good. It just really, we kind of expected this. Me personally, obviously, having these conversations with Justin for the last 3 years, like, I'm not surprised this is happening. Like, I'm not caught off guard. I think it's just observing everything, it's just been absolutely wild. And I have to remind myself that I am one of few that are in this, following this very niche sector. And so when I see, my algorithm on my Twitter feed just bombard me with uranium bullish posts, I have to sit back and remind myself, like, this isn't the world right now. This is a very, very small subsector of individuals that have been, in this trade for a while. And they're right. They're absolutely right. People like Justin, you, Cuppy, a lot of these, a lot of friends on Twitter, absolutely right. But I got to remind myself, we haven't seen the longevity of this trade yet play out. We're not there yet.
So. Yeah, it'll be sort of obvious when it's time to leave. I think the obvious thing is when governments supposedly like the free market. I don't know if they actually believe that or not, but they pretend to like the free market. Governments hate when finance interferes with the free market. When a bunch of finance guys do something that hurts their constituents that are... governments don't really care about the peasants, unless the peasants really cry loudly, but the peasants aren't going to cry loudly because this isn't going to impact their electricity costs. So it's their other constituent, which is utilities that have lobbyists. And at some point, the price will go to a level where governments will take notice, and that's when you want to have an exit because the largest mobile stockpiles are Sput and Yellowcake, along with some hedge funds. And I've never seen hedge funds, get the better side of a deal with Congress. They're always the ones that get screwed somehow. They become a punching bag. And so when governments start talking about it, that's when your exit is. And until then, just ride.
Cuppy, appreciate your time. Justin, I know you're traveling. Appreciate your time as always. This was a great conversation. Obviously, one that I think a lot of people are going to listen to just of where we're at. There's a lot of excitement. So, gentlemen, Cuppy, let's have you back on here later this year if we can. See how this
thing's going. Sure, we'll do it again. I'll do it again.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Trevor. Thanks, Cuppy. Good to see you.
Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.